from Christian Aid, works in education in Christian Aid.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being brave enough to come. The centre manager was just saying when we saw the title, we thought everybody will run. And I know how that feels. As she said, I work for Christian Aid in Education, and that means that I'm interested in how people's attitudes are formed and how they're changed, where they get their messages from and how they interpret them, and how they act and the information that they're given. Obviously, I also am interested in connecting the personal with the global. But what I've learned in my 14 years was that as long as I was telling the stories about poverty, people were really happy. They were on my side. But when I started talking about their money, I'm just not as popular as I used to be. It seems to kind of hit something deep in our souls that gets people kind of twitchy, especially in churches. I have a favourite story that I tell against my mother. And I tell it because she had the honesty to express what I think a lot of us feel. We're sitting in church with her, and my husband was going to preach on consider the lilies of the field. So she whispered to me, he's going to tell us about not spending money on clothes, you know. Anyway, the sermon was actually about don't worry. So I said to her at the end, well, what did you think of the sermon? And she said, well, I didn't listen because I didn't want to hear what he had to say. And I think a lot of us do that about money. We find ways of not listening. It's too threatening, it's too hard, and somehow it feels like bad news. And I think I'm beginning to understand that tithe was to go in celebration. There was a tithe for the upbuilding of the church, there was a tithe of the first. We're all different, and we all start from different starting points, obviously. And these early decisions. So that was one thing I kind of had to kind of begin to look at in those years. The other thing I learned was people were very generous. And I began to get echoes of God's generosity in other people. For example, a minister I'd hardly met, I can remember him sending a cheque for £50 in an envelope, a lot of money when I was young. Because, you're young and you're new and you'll probably need money in your new house. And I thought that was just so generous. So I learned a bit about receiving, the other side of giving, and that a lot of my giving was to do with being in control and to try and think, what did that mean in terms of my faith? I was in control. I was the person who cared. My identity was bound up and I was the good fundraiser. But actually, it was to do with power. And just getting that hint of generosity from people, I began to realize that perhaps some of that power, or actually all of that power, is in God's hands, not in mine. And a tussle went on for a while about how did I shift my security from mammon, from money, to God? And don't ask me the answer because I haven't got it hacked yet, but I'm still listening to it, that phrase. How do I shift my security? I think the other thing I learned at that time, and I didn't learn it then, I've learned it now. I was money rich, but I was money poor, but I was time rich. And I realized relationships and things that I did in that time have borne fruit way beyond my expectation. I had nothing else to give. All I could do was sit and make cups of coffee and have conversations. But I actually think in that giving, probably more has happened than on all my kind of major attempts to be the giver and the fundraiser and so on. So these were interesting kind of lessons and part of my journey. That part of the whole story about giving is not focusing on me, but focusing on the God who gives to me. And what do I do with that? How do I respond to that? And that was a whole shift in thinking for me. Early 90s, I fulfilled my lifelong ambition to start working for Christian Aid, because that was my bottom line, this passion for the poor. But there were two interesting small incidents that happened to me in that time. One was a visit to the Philippines, where we were in a tribal village with people who, in absolute terms, had nothing. just nothing. And yet, a group of us arriving, they gave us water from their water butt to wash. They had no water. There was no water on the mountaintop. But they gave us their water. They gave us their homemade hooch because we were thirsty. Which was interesting in itself. But these kind of gifts, and they gave us their time. They gathered everybody together to hear our story and to tell us theirs. And I thought, I haven't got this generosity thing. I just do not understand it. That they who have nothing were 100 times more generous than we who had come from the rich West with all our ideas and all our understanding about kind of trade and aid and debt and the poor. Yet the lesson I took from that trip was somehow with less money people are more generous. Not a new truth, but it kind of hit me. And at that time, I found this quote from Helder Camara, which Dom Helder Camara, which kind of I had always believed wasn't true, and I can't find it now. But his quote was in terms that I used to think Jesus was exaggerating when he said that money affects the way we live. It puts scales over our eyes and stops our ears and closes our hearts. That doesn't seem like good news, and for a long time I really struggled with that phrase. But when I was in that story in the Philippines, I suddenly thought, that's right. I who have money, I'm kind of parceling it out very carefully, you know, and I'll give you a little of my time and a little of my money, but these people just gave us what they had. And that was an interesting lesson. And one that I'm quite not sure that I've totally understood yet. The second lesson, which again came from a completely different source. The Church of the Saviour in Washington has a whole lot of very exciting ministries. Ministries for drug rehab, for alcoholism, job centres, the elderly, and so on. But one of them is called the Ministry of Money, where they encourage people to consider Zacchaean economics. I was fascinated by this. And so I went to a course on giving. And here at this course, I met millionaires who were giving away 90% of their money. And I thought, in any terms, that is not easy. How are they doing it? What have they heard that makes them realize I can be free? I shared a room with a millionaire woman who was probably the unhappiest person I've ever met, because her childhood experience was that money was to be held onto. And so firmly had that been drummed into her, she didn't even cash checks. She put them in her safe, because then she still had them. And the difficulty for her of breaking through into this kind of, that we could give away money and be happy, and actually, in a faith journey, begin to understand the God who is totally generous, was really, really a struggle for her. So I learned there about the richest and the people whom I often decry teaching me about Zacchaean economics. So what does that mean? Zacchaeus met Jesus. And, of course, his response was to give money. I'll give away half my money to the poor, and I'll give back four times anything I've stolen. Four times anything I've stolen was the law. Deuteronomy, they said, steal a man's sheep, you've got to give him four back. But giving away half his money was his response to God saying, you are an important person and I'm coming to see you. So that was the Zacchaean economics, to be thinking, what will we do in response to Jesus? The Mennonites in Canada express it a different way. They say, God asks for our money because he wants our hearts. God asks for our money because he wants our hearts. The Bible would say, you know, where your heart is, where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. I want you to buzz again. What's your reaction to that? God asks for our money because he wants your hearts. Have a chat together again. See what you think. Okay. I realize that's a harder question, and maybe you just need to go away with it and hold on to it. But I think it's something to do with the recognition that our possessions and our money are tied up with who we are. And the way I kind of can think of that is when someone, often when people's houses have been robbed, they talk about their self being violated. But in fact, it's because they're tied up in their possessions. So I talked a bit about the law. And as we go through the Bible, the themes continue about care for the poor. And of course, the Jews, as they got wealthier, as we do today, also began to be less generous. So the prophets railed against them and kind of called them all sorts of things to kind of bring them back. And when they asked God, "What should I do?" He said, "Bring me your tithes." But then we come into the Gospels, and there's a kind of change in emphasis. I had a colleague who used to say, when you look at giving in the New Testament, it's reckless. And I thought, I'm not sure that I know what he means by that. But of course, Zacchaeus was reckless. He gave away half his money. Suddenly it didn't matter anymore. Or the story, I don't know if like you, when you read the story of the workers who are hired for the vineyard, I'm often so caught up in feeling like the first workers that life is so unfair that I don't actually look at the vineyard owner, who was so generous that it really didn't matter. Why should we be concerned that he paid the last workers more? But I know for a long time I have been. It just seems a bit unjust. But his generosity ensured that they too were fed. So there are lots of stories. And of course, the theme is that if throughout the whole of the New Testament, that if we gave as much concern to our faith journey as we do into our dealings with money, the world would be a very different place. If we were to take God's teaching as our benchmark, instead of the world's teaching, the world would be a very different place. I want to just do a slight twist here and talk about what Frank Lake calls the circle of grace. And it's to do with your spiritual journey, but I think it was very revealing to me in terms of my money journey.
Okay. In our journey of faith, what the gospel says is that we are accepted, we are loved, we are welcomed in, and we are part of the family. We are sustained by words like, do not be afraid, I love you. We are sustained by words of God's assurance of who we are. And in that, we begin to discover our identity. Our identity is not caught up. Our identity is not caught up in what we do, but who we are. And when we're... I'll go back to this one.
When we're sure who we are, we then begin to achieve what it is that God wants for us to achieve. Wants us to achieve. And in the Bible would put it this way: acceptance, come to me. The sustenance and identity, abide in me, and achievement, go for me. But what so often happens in our world is the other way around. And it's what happened for me with money. My early dealings with money and with giving were about achievement. They were about, look at me, look what I can do. I am the best fundraiser in the north of Scotland for Christian Aid. Watch me, and I'll make more and more. So it was all to do with my achievements. That, of course, created my identity. People would say, gosh, isn't she terrific? And she really knows what she's doing, and she is one of God's real workers. Nothing bad in that, but that's the way it went. So my sustenance was things in the Bible like, well done, good and faithful servant, or the parable of the talents, which I heard in worship this morning. And therefore, I thought I had become accepted. I had got the circle of grace completely the wrong way around, and had done a circle of works, is what we would call it. And the tussle for me in money and giving is to turn that around. To be absolutely clear that I know, and when I know and love God, I can do no other than give. You can give without loving, but you can't love without giving. It's just part of our very nature. And I'm constantly in a tussle between me and God in that circle of grace to remember that who I am and who God is makes me do no other than achieve for Him and give. I think that's an interesting thing because our whole world is based on achievements. Everything we do, rather than who we are. No more so in our money than anything else. And Aristotle put it this way: he who thinks he is not loved seeks to be admired. Right? It's the circle in reverse. They don't feel accepted, so we continue to achieve, and we turn it around. It's a kind of side issue, but I think it goes back to that very first thing that I was saying about the whole thing about giving, the whole thing about money is a spiritual journey. It's not an economic one. It's to do with where our faith is. It's to do with who we think God is and His generosity. And people who've been along that journey, of course, will consistently say, the more you give away, the more you seem to have. It's God's law of supply and demand. I met with missionaries recently, retired missionaries, and I said, tell me what you've experienced about giving. And that's what they said. It didn't matter how much they gave away, there was always more to give. And of course, that's what's reflected in the early church. We get Corinthians saying, you know, there will always be enough and more. Enough for your need and more. And I think part of our journey, part of our spiritual journey, is kind of living with what would be the hard sayings. Living with, give to everyone who begs from you. Do we? Really want to live with anyone who give to everyone who begs from you? I lived with that one winter and decided, daft experiment, in Advent I would give 50 pence to every homeless person in Glasgow. There are not a few. Their lives were not changed by that, but mine was, because I had to think quite seriously about, I didn't notice the 50p's going out, though I thought I would. I wasn't any harder up, we didn't have a poorer Christmas. But I had to think about their situation. It was me just being a kind of fool for God. There was no rhyme nor reason to it. But it was to counter the thing that people were saying, don't give to the homeless, you know, they're not worth it. They don't deserve it. It's just changing that kind of thinking around. And I'm not sure yet what that means, but I play around with it in my head. I'm not done and dusted. I'm still on the journey. I think we're all on the journey, but the journey is from putting our freedom, or our hope and freedom in money, to our hope and freedom in God. And then our generosity and our gratitude, just our second nature. So I've talked a lot about personal things, but it's because I believe the personal affects the global. I believe I would love to have a conversation with the G8 men to hear what their early childhood experiences were. Because they're making decisions which are keeping half the world poor. There's no other way to look at it. They are making decisions which keep half the world poor because somehow we need our money. I would love to have a conversation with them. It's a very private issue, but it's very global. Our decisions about what we give, our decisions about how we spend the rest are very private, but they have global consequences. And I think we have to find our role models. Find the people who are out there ahead of us. And I'm going to end with a quote from Brother Roger, partly because, of course, he's been very much in our minds in this last week with his murder. And he has this phrase which says, we need to give ourselves up to 7 years to let go of everything that's not indispensable, beginning with what we spend on prestige. I think Brother Roger knew about the freedom of not worrying about money. And I can only hint at it. I can only begin to kind of get glimpses of what he was talking about. I think we've got about 2 minutes left. And I wondered if you would just for 2 minutes talk with each other about what advice do you give to someone who says in your church or faith community, about giving. What advice do you give them? What advice would you give them if anyone ever dared to ask you? Just 2 minutes.
take it or just leave it, and I'll let the two Christian heroes do something. That would be, and then the candle then to them. So what stage do you want to draw this to?
You can do it. I mean,
do you want to draw it to close?
Well, I'll do that.
Okay. And then I'll thank you.
Can I just draw us to a close because time is marching on? And say thank you for risking and for coming over your lunch hour to a talk on giving. And I hope we just have some conversations over the weekend, because I think I have just so much to learn from everyone here. I know I have. And I would just love to hear some of the things that have been going on.
Right, can I just express our thanks, first of all, to your thanks to Maggie for that excellent talk with so many challenges. And we hear briefly from Christian Aid.
Hello, I'm Jenny and a colleague of Maggie's at Christian Aid, and I'm sure she'd agree, she's touched on the fact that one of the joys of our job is meeting inspiring, wonderful overseas partners, having encounters with them in various different places. And one of these, with somebody from the Christian Council of Sierra Leone, was made particularly memorable for me by a remark that she made, saying that Christian Aid is not a suitcase agency. In other words, Christian Aid doesn't pack up its suitcases and leave when the TV cameras do, or when the immediate needs go away. They stick around. Christian Aid partners, Christian Aid makes a long-term committed relationship with its partners, which means they can make a long-term committed relationship to stick with people where they are. And we can do that because people make long-term committed relationships to Christian Aid, not with, what was it called, Johnny Jolly Diners and Halfpennies, but in various other different ways, including giving through their bank accounts. And that's why people like me are wearing these orange bibs and giving up our bank holiday weekends to enable people, to give people the opportunity of supporting us in this way with a regular committed gift through their bank account. If you're one of those people and you'd like to do that, don't go away because you'll lose the piece of paper and your greenbelt stuff. Do it now, do it today, and talk to one of us wearing these orange bibs. We're scattered around this venue. And again, thank you to Maggie. I've got a circle of grace on my hand now, which I'm going to be pondering on all day. Many thanks.